Thank you all for listening to this episode of Last Born in the Wilderness. If you enjoy and appreciate the work that I do with this project, please consider supporting me in the production of this podcast by going to the Last Born in the Wilderness Patreon page, that is at patreon.com/lastborninthewilderness. By going to that site, you can make very small monthly contributions. You can make as little as $1 a month contributions to this podcast, and by doing so, you can gain early access to the content of these episodes a week in advance. If you'd like to find out more about this podcast, you can always go to the website lastborninthewilderness.com and find out all you need to know about this project, including links to social media, contact information, the YouTube page, the Patreon page, and one-time donation page as well.
Three old dogs, worn out car, a wife who was leaving for good. Life's made of trouble, worry, pain, and struggle. She wrote goodbye in the dust on the hood. We found a map of Missouri, lipstick on a glass. They must have left in the middle of the night. To know the same thing, everyone wants to know, how's it gone to end? Behind a smoke-colored curtain, the girl disappeared. They found out that the ring was a fake. A tree born crooked will never grow straight. She sunk like a hammer into the lake. Long lost letter in an old leaky boat. Promises I never meant to keep. And I want to know the same thing. I want to know, how's it gone? Dried their wings, the moon climbed up an empty sky. The sun sank down behind the tree on the hill. There's a killer and he's coming to the ride. But maybe he's the father of that lost little girl. It's hard to tell in this light. And I want to know the same thing. Everyone wants to know, how's it going to end?
Paul Ehrlich, our guest for this episode, is the Bing Professor of Population Studies of the Department of Biology at Stanford University and president of Stanford Center for Conservation Biology. In this episode, Paul and I discuss the very severe loss of biodiversity on this planet in recent decades, human civilization and its detrimental impact on animal and insect populations, abrupt climate change, the toxification of the environment, the looming specter of nuclear war, as well as the psychological blind spots in the individual and collective human psyche that allows for this massive level of destruction to take place without much attention and meaningful change to ensure our collective survival. Paul only had about 30 minutes to talk with me on these subjects, so we couldn't go too deeply into them, but I appreciate the time Paul was able to give for this episode. To get more of an understanding of the work Paul does regarding these subjects, I encourage listeners to check out the Millennium Alliance for Humanity and the Biosphere website at mahb.stanford.edu. To quote from the website, "The goal of the MAHB is to create a platform to help global civil society address the interconnections among the greatest threats to human well-being, failure of ecosystem services, economic inequity, social injustice, hunger, epidemics, toxic chemicals, and loss of security to crime, terrorism, and war, especially resource wars, veiled or not, to name a few." I'd like again to thank Paul for his important and necessary work and for taking the time to speak with me and discuss these topics. And without any further delay, on with the episode. Thank you. So there's been all these reports that have been coming out about you know, massive population decline in wildlife worldwide, along with insect decline as well. Populations of insects have declined significantly in the past few decades. What is your assessment? I know that you've done plenty of research into that. You know, what is exactly happening? There's been this term, the sixth mass extinction, thrown around. And depending on who you ask, you know, whether they prefer to use that term or not, but with it, both sides cannot deny that there is a massive decline in population of wildlife on this planet. And I just wanted to ask you, like, what is going on and what does this all mean?
Well, the scientific community is actually united on this. There's very little doubt. What do we know? We know that extinction has always been part of the evolutionary process. If there hadn't been extinctions, there wouldn't be people. The issue is, at the moment, and what the scientific community understands, is that the rates of extinction through geologic time have not been constant. There have been a series previously of five very high rate extinction periods. Not certain what caused all of them, although for some of them, at least, it looks very likely that an extraterrestrial object hit the Earth and it basically caused a nuclear winter. That's what happened to the dinosaurs about around 66 million years ago. And what's recently been shown, basically without question, is that the rate now is once again going way above the background. The background rate would be the general rate of extinction between these large, the other five mass extinction episodes, but very fine work by Tony Barnosky when he was at Berkeley and so on, very conservatively showed what the extinction rates were at the background time. And similar studies have shown what's going on now. And we're losing species at a rate roughly 100 times that during background. So no question we are in the sixth great extinction episode, but the rate of species disappearing, distinct kinds of animals and plants disappearing, is slow enough that it doesn't make much impression on human beings. What does make an impression on human beings is the crashes in populations, because populations, all the populations of a species have to go extinct before the species is gone. Mm-hmm. And yet it's the populations that give us the natural services, sometimes called ecosystem services, that support humanity's civilization. In other words, the things that human beings are now doing, there's not the slightest, tiniest question that the cause of these extinctions is the expansion of the human enterprise. Too many people, and that leads them to consume too much in aggregate. And it's that consumption that is responsible for roughly half of the planet's wildlife disappearing in the last 40 years, and most of the rest of it is going to disappear in the next 40 years, the crashes of insect populations and so on. There's no question at all who's causing it. And you don't have to be a scientist to understand it. All organisms, plants, animals, microorganisms require certain environments in which to persist. Guess what? For instance, butterflies have to have the appropriate plants for their caterpillars to eat and the appropriate plants to produce nectar for the adults to feed on so they can reproduce. There are about 15,000 species of butterflies on the planet. They're starting to, the populations are disappearing rapidly. And the main reason is that we've turned much of the planet into a feeding base for Homo sapiens, largely grains, wheat, rice, corn, or maize, as it's often called, potatoes. None of those plants are suitable for feeding a butterfly. And so as you take away all the habitat that butterflies need, guess what? The butterflies tend to disappear. If you look at it in general, try and imagine how many other kinds of plants and animals evolved to live in strip malls, on airport runways, on highways, in cornfields, and so on. In other words, all a person has to know is that we are destroying habitats around the planet all the time. Every time you see a building going up, a mall going in, a field being plowed, or when you sit down to eat dinner, you know that you are partaking in the human activities that are reducing the biodiversity that human beings absolutely depend upon for their civilization and their lives. It's not a very cheery picture, I'm sorry to say.
No, it's okay. I'm very accustomed to this type of to hearing this type of information. I read it all the time, and it's I think it's a journey, if that's the right word to use, to try to contemplate and understand what all this means for you as an individual, but as well as what it means to be a human being and a part of a species that ultimately is engaging in certain activities and behavior that is, you know, ultimately going to not only lead to the extinction of much of the other life on this planet, but also potentially the extinction of our own species as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's what's, I mean, it's something to contemplate. And I think your work plays into that. I mean, trying to expose that and highlight that and make sure that people are hopefully more aware and, I mean, optimistic, you know, if you want to be optimistic, you could say that this type of information should change people's attitudes and have them work towards, if you want to use the word sustainable, more sustainable systems, if that's even a possible thing at this time. But it doesn't seem like that's the trend. Yeah. That doesn't seem like the direction that we're going. It doesn't matter how much information is being thrown out there about the decline of animal populations, insect populations, et cetera. It doesn't seem to change anything.
Well, we have in the most powerful nation in the world, a government run by thugs, led by a moron's moron. And they are working very, very hard to destroy biodiversity and in the process, of course, bring down human civilization. I have many, many colleagues in science. Everybody is desperately disturbed by the current trends because things were not going that well 2 years ago. But with those of us very interested in cultural evolution have been stunned at the rate in which very fundamental norms in our society have been changed, all to the detriment of our future. So I can't say anything political, but somebody could guess who I'm talking about, probably.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess I could ask you that is maybe not the political element, but the I mean, you have the intelligence and the background to, and you've written plenty of you know, things on this subject of like kind of where we're going as a species and on this planet, what the planet is turning into. But I mean, as a human being, as an individual, you know, I imagine that what we're experiencing collectively on this planet right now is very surreal. It doesn't feel like this because it's speeding up. I mean,
yeah, that's right. It's all getting worse.
Yeah, it seems like it's harder to keep track of everything that's happening. I mean, I'm just trying to keep track of what policy and laws are being enacted in Congress just in the past month. And you know, just try to keep track of that or, you know, the population decline in species or, you know, climate change. I mean, it's just it's speeding up so fast. It's really hard to process this information. And
well, this very day, they're talking about shrinking a couple of areas that can be important to biodiversity in Utah. For instance, only the toxification of the planet, we're removing what few regulations there are on the toxic substances and not moving on things like if you talk about the biodiversity in the oceans, we're now dumping so much plastic trash into the oceans that the prediction is that in a very few years there will be a bigger weight of plastics in the oceans than there are fishes.
That is insane.
And the plastics are basically immortal. They're, with very few exceptions, they're ground down to smaller and smaller sizes. So there are microplastic particles filling the oceans, and they are able to invade the single-celled organisms or the very small organisms, the plankton that just drift in the ocean, that are the bottom of the food chain. They're carried up, we now know, through the food chain, so that when we sit down to eat seafood, more and more we're eating a dinner of plastic. Now, that's bad enough in itself because we know the little plastic particles are very harmful to cells, but they also are coated with toxic substances that mimic hormones. So we're basically poisoning ourselves through the oceanic food chain, and the microplastics are becoming commoner and commoner in air, soil, and freshwater. And yet there's not any step being taken to limit the production of plastics and the dumping of plastics in the ocean. A few places are trying to ban plastic bags and so on, but the basic problem is escalating. If you look at the population problem, one news you could take as cheery is that globally human sperm counts are plummeting, so that we may go back to the days of the women's liberation movement. Remember, the motto was a woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle. We're getting in deeper and deeper trouble there. And of course, climate disruption is a gigantic threat, and not primarily because sea level is rising. Sea level rise will affect many, many millions of people, but the attack on the agricultural system, which is in bad shape already from many points of view, is what's going to cause the big disaster. It's going to affect billions of people. And so most of my colleagues are now concerned very much not with avoiding a collapse of civilization. They believe that the growth manic culture we have can't be reversed. The issue is, can you make the crash less disastrous, kill fewer people, make fewer people totally distressed and uncomfortable? And then if you could have a crash of civilization, a collapse, will there be enough information left over to have a reset, a restart of civilization? And we have a big symposium coming up soon that's going to focus in part on the issue of how do you design an economic system that isn't a growth mania and won't just lead even more rapidly to another collapse. That's the change in focus. And I hate to say something so depressing, but again, when you see that every politician depends on more growth, even though growth is the disease that's wrecking our life support systems, they still think it's cure. And until some big time, you know, if Donald Trump gets up and says, I finally realized our problem is humanity's grown too big for its planet, and we've got to work very hard to reduce our pressure on the resources and life support systems of the planet, then I'll think there's some hope. Don't hold your breath.
Well, I mean, let's say that we somehow managed to get through the next, was it 3 years now of his term? And let's say that he doesn't get elected again because of how unpopular he is. But I mean, I think that the system itself is broken, and it doesn't really matter if we get rid of Donald Trump or we get rid of his cabinet or, you know, the people that he's put into power. Yeah. It just seems, I mean, I feel like the same issues were in maybe less extreme ways, but were manifesting under the Obama administration or the Bush, you know, previous administrations. And
we're in total agreement. Yeah. In other words, I've been discussing with a lot of my colleagues, and we all were 2 years ago utterly distressed by the way the system is working, the grow, regardless of what you wipe out and what you do to your life support systems. The thing that's stunning is that the whole thing has been, you know, we thought maybe we had a few decades at that time. Now that time is shrinking dramatically because of everything that's being done actively to push for the collapse. And is what I agree with you. I think Trump is just a symptom, just a loser who managed in various ways to get into a position of power, but he doesn't have any idea what to do with the power. And what's even more scary to me, and should be scary to you, is he strikes me as the sort of person that if it's finally revealed to the public what a criminal swine he is, he's likely to try and divert attention from that by starting a war in the Korean Peninsula. All the people I know who follow the nuclear war situation, and I know many of them because I worked with them in the days of the nuclear winter studies, think that the nuclear war situation is more dangerous today than any time during the Cold War. So you want to talk about what we're going to do to biodiversity and ourselves, there's a number one issue to worry about.
Right. Well, something that I think has come up talking about that the threat of nuclear war, or you know, nuclear engagement, is, isn't it true that essentially the president could just decide to launch nuclear weapons, and there really wouldn't be much to hinder him from doing so, except maybe, of course, his advisors and, you know, his generals that are near him saying, no, you shouldn't do this. But as far as I can understand, he doesn't have to go through very many steps.
Matt says, I understand it too. There is apparently some movement, some movement, but I'm afraid it's just probably among Democrats in Congress to change the law so that he can't single-handedly destroy the world. And by the way, even a small nuclear war, say between India and Pakistan, would end civilization as we know it. There's a big literature on that as well. But it's extremely scary to have a psychopath. We actually have a situation in which, as far as I can tell, we have two nuclear powers, one coming along in North Korea and ours, each run by somebody who is psychopathic, who's mentally ill and very dangerous. And more and more people are recognizing that and even talking about it. But I'm afraid that the likelihood is that the Republicans will not impeach Trump. And of course, he's backed up by a team of idiots. So that you really, I think you have to impeach about 15 people before you find somebody with an IQ over 20. And the whole situation is close to desperate.
Yes. Well, yeah, like you mentioned, if let's say we, you know, like people like to find one thing and blame it all on this. So in this case, it's Trump. And of course, he is a threat. And I'm not diminishing that by any means. But let's say we got rid of Trump. Let's say we had a successful impeachment process and he got out. Or he resigned or something, right? Then we'd have Mike Pence. We'd have Mike Pence, who's a, you know, even evangelical Christian fascist. I mean, in many ways, it's insane to me that people think that this. I guess what I guess I want people to do more of, which I'm not hopeful, but let's just say if I was hopeful for something, I would hope that people would start to think more deeply about how broken the entire system is, and to be more imaginative and think outside of the constraints that we've been born into, as far as you know, think about these things.
We certainly agree. But I mean, when you think that in Alabama, very large numbers of people who've been interviewed on TV would rather have a child molester idiot in the Senate than a Democrat.
Right.
Not that the Democrats are all that great, but and one of the things that worries me a great deal about finding ways to change is what I call the National Rifle Association theorem. Namely, if you have 2 million people in the country who really care about something, they can hold the whole country hostage. Most Americans will have some kind of sane gun control, but the NRA, which is just, of course, the lobbyists for the armaments industry, manages to keep these idiots out there perpetually pushing to have more people killed with automatic weapons. And so if you think if Trump's got 30 million idiots voting for him and caring for him, they'll win the election because the other side won't get itself organized well enough. That's what I'm worried. One of the many things I'm worried about.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, again, that's the political issues, but you know, I find myself in this battle within myself, to where I want to focus on these subjects. You know, I do this podcast so I can talk to people like you and, you know, bring this information out there in my own small way. And while I focus on these subjects and I want to do something, there's also this other part of me that's just trying to almost shield myself from that reality that I'm exposing myself to. You know, I want to just like kind of fall into watching TV shows, distracting myself with really dumb media. It's really easy to do.
Don't you like wine?
You know, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Drink good wine and keep your internal environment in good shape while the external goes down the drain. Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Because I'm old enough that my main worry is what kind of world I'm leaving to my children and grandchildren and my friends' children and grandchildren. So I, you know, a lot of people say it's all over. Why do you bother? And yeah. I keep saying, you got to do it while there's any chance at all that you can make the world a better place for the generation that's coming along. The recent events have really depressed virtually everybody who's got an IQ over 50. And what can I tell you? I could lie to you and tell you I was very, very optimistic. As a matter of fact, I was giving a talk just the other day, and for the first time, somebody in the audience got up and said, come on, be honest. What do you think we're going to make it? And I just said, no. As long as you have the growth mania so embedded, it doesn't matter. Trump will be replaced by some other politician who says something truly deeply moronic, like the U.S. has to grow at 4% a year. It just shows you that you have people out there able to dress themselves that can't do arithmetic, don't understand what 4% a year growth in anything means in the medium term, even let alone the long term. So what can I tell you?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm not here to ask, you know, for you to cheer me up here. I've tried.
God knows I've tried.
Well, I mean, you want to live your life the best you can with what time you have.
Students, young people now in science and so on, keep doing the science, because even though it's useless today, if we have a reset, a lot of the things that we know could be useful in the future. And it's also fun to do. So have a fun life and remain as politically active as you possibly can be, because if these problems have any chance of being solved, it's going to be because individuals get out there, as they are now. I mean, the people who have gone out and gone to senators' offices and protested the plan that the Republicans are putting through to steal money from the poorest people in our society and give it to the rich bastards who don't need it. Those people are doing the right thing. And I hope they'll continue. And I'm going to continue raving on podcasts, because you got to take any chance you've got. And congratulations for you doing it too.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, I send out emails trying to get, you know, as many interesting and insightful human beings as I can on this thing. And so having you respond means a great deal to me. So I thank you for that.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Yeah.
Do it again after the nuclear war starts.
Oh, yeah. Well, if we could end this real quick. I know we have about 5 minutes before 30 minutes is up. I was going to ask you, so if you could give, I mean, I know projections are hard. It's a really complex system that we're experiencing and that we're a part of.
Right.
But what do you, like, as far as environmentally, ecologically, what do you project to happen within, say, 10 years, if you have any sort of insight into that?
Well, I don't have no crystal ball. And the first thing you have to ask is there going to be what might be called a discontinuity? That is, what's going to happen over the next 10 or 20 years if there is a nuclear war, if there is a global pandemic, something like Ebola really gets loose and so on. If the sperm counts don't continue to go down gradually, but suddenly crash and so on, then all bets will be off and it's very difficult to predict. Otherwise, if we have what you might call a business as usual scenario, what's going to happen is we're going to lose more and more of our life support systems. People will notice this, just like, for instance, bird watchers have noticed there are not as many birds around anymore. And of course, the insect stuff, the loss of wildlife in Africa and around the planet in general and so on, are recognized by some people, but not by most. But I suspect that all of that will get to be much more dramatic and much more noticed. And our diets will change more and more. The cost of certain kinds of seafood will go way up. A lot depends on how the climate disruption interacts with agriculture. We're already losing nutrition in our standard crops, because the more carbon dioxide we put into the atmosphere, the smaller the proportion of micronutrients in the crops. Our main crops do not react well to the kind of climate change we're seeing. The food system is already in a state where something on the order of 700 million people are hungry on the planet, and another 2 billion have inadequate micronutrients, so they're not fully functional. And that's out of 7.5 billion. So you got maybe 2.5 billion people who are already in trouble for food, and we're growing towards 11 billion, some people project, by the end of the century. Not a pretty picture. So things, I think, will just become more obviously bad, people, but people tend to adjust to that. So as business as usual, I think it's likely to be several decades before people realize that they're in a collapse and that there's no turning back from it. But again, it depends on, we could have, Trump could start a nuclear war this afternoon and our entire conversation would be moot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's
A really cheery note. So go to that bottle of wine.
Yeah, drink some more wine. Just drink the good wine as much as you can.
Yeah, you don't want it destroyed in a nuclear war.
Yeah. Well, Paul, if you could direct, is there any sort of events, you know, maybe some website or any sort of...
The website I would recommend everybody go to and join up is the MAHB website, M-A-H-B. The site is M-A-H-B at Stanford, STANFORD.EDU. And it's a group trying to get civil society to organize itself better, to try and turn things around. And it's a place where there are blogs, where people can participate. It doesn't cost a nickel to sign up, and it doesn't take more than a minute or two. And I think it's one of the best things on the planet at the moment. Not adequate, but at least something to get together with people with common goals.
Of course. Okay. Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the description of this episode.
That would be great.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to Last Born in the Wilderness. Have a wonderful week, and as a psychedelic bard, Terrence McKenna, said, take it easy, dude, but take it.
The green was as gold as Sheila's hair, all the way from Liverpool with all we could steal. He was robbed of $20, his body found stripped, cast into the harbor there and drowned. And I want to know the same thing. We all want to know how's it gone to him. The sirens are snaking their way up the hill. His last call somewhere in the world. The reptiles blend in with the color of the street. Life is sweet at the edge of a razor. And down in the first row of an old picture show, an old man is asleep. The credits start to roll. And I want to know the same thing. We all want to know how's it gone. Gone to him.